From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Randall White. In today for Beth Ruyak, the demographics of California's registered voters is always in flux. But in recent years, those choosing to register as Republicans has dropped off dramatically. In fact, new numbers show registered voters are down in general. Also, today's a big day for California Governor Jerry Brown as he prepares to unveil his budget update. As projected revenues for the state could open up a lot of extra money to consider. Joining us to talk about these topics and more is Capital Public Radio's Capital Bureau Chief Ben Adler. Welcome, as always, Ben, to Insight.
It's great to be with you, Randall.
Ben, let's start with the numbers. Registered Republicans in the state now hold roughly the same percentage as voters of no party preference.
Yeah, so right now there are roughly 4.7 million or so Republicans and no party preference voters. There are now exactly 28,649 more GOP registered voters in the state than those registered without party preference. That comes out to 0.16%, 16 hundredths of a percent, about a quarter each of the overall electorate, compared to about 8.4 million Democrats. That's about 45%. Now, both are losing, both lost, you know, about 65,000 voters from the start of the year until this report, which looked at the data as of early April. That could be any number of reasons why there was such a drop from then until now, about 125,000 voter drop overall. But especially given there's supposedly a lot of enthusiasm about this election. So that was noteworthy. But of course, the headline is going to be wither the Republican Party.
And historically, at this percentage, this is a historic low.
Yes, I believe it is for Republicans. And let's remember that, it was only a couple of decades ago that Republicans had a fair amount of power in California. The state was electing Republican presidents. The state was electing Republican governors. Democrats have generally controlled the legislature for much of the last several decades. But the state has been frequently willing to elect Republicans who maybe they aren't necessarily socially conservative, maybe someone more like Arnold Schwarzenegger, who's fiscally conservative and socially moderate, but the state has shown in the past a willingness to elect Republicans. At this point, not a lot of observers expect a Republican governor when Jerry Brown leaves office at early next year.
Last weekend, Ben, you were at the annual California Republican Party convention in San Diego. Did the topic of voter registration come up much?
I mean, they're obviously aware of it. They don't necessarily always like to be asked about it. But, I mean, what you've got is a difference of opinion within different parts of the party. You've got some of the conservatives who feel, look, if we're not going to provide a real contrast to the party in power, what do we stand for? And then there are the so-called New Way Republicans like Schwarzenegger who argue in a state like California, if the Republican Party is going to have a future and be relevant, then we have to reflect the electorate. And so you go back and forth on that.
With a top two system like California has, does registration play as much of a role as it would in other states?
No, not in terms of that. I mean, in presidential elections, Democrats have open primaries, so no party preference voters can request Democratic ballots. Republicans have closed presidential primaries, so only Republicans can vote, at least currently. Now, for this, we don't have the closed primaries because it's the top two primary, and everyone's going to vote for the same batch of candidates, and Democrats can vote for Republicans and vice versa and anything in between.
Mm. Okay, today is Governor Brown's big budget update called the May Revise. Explain to us lay people how that works.
So the governor proposes a budget every January, and then he updates that proposal in May. And the reason it's updated is, well, there's this little thing called taxes, and the IRS and the Franchise Tax Board get all of our money in April, and they're able to then project, the state's experts are then able to look at, okay, how much money is coming in, how much of it needs to go to, for example, schools under Proposition 98 and the Rainy Day Fund under Proposition 2, and how much is available for other purposes, and also how much money do we expect to bring in over the course of the next fiscal year. So given that data, then it's a it's just an updated proposal that makes sense because in January, you don't know exactly how much money's coming in. Plus, you have a better picture of how much much money was spent over the last year, which departments and programs are over budget and which ones are under budget. And you can put together just a more tangible spending proposal for the coming year. In parallel, the legislature, each chamber, Assembly and Senate, have been working for several months on their own budget proposals. And so what you have today is essentially the kickoff of budget negotiations in earnest over the next month leading up to the June 15th deadline. You've got an Assembly Democratic proposal, a Senate Democratic proposal, and the governor's proposal. And eventually the three of them will come together and merge those proposals into one.
Mm. And we have a clip of Senator Holly Mitchell weighing in on the subject. Let's take a listen.
I think there's lots of agreement between the two houses around some of the critical issues facing California, housing affordability and homelessness, how we provide care for our lowest income residents. We know that there's been no cost of living increase in Social Security Supplement and CalWORKs program, the program that helps keep children out of deep poverty. And so we're looking at COLA opportunities. We're looking on the medical side. You know, in Medi-Cal, we've been able to the last several years, again, reinvest in that program where we cut in the last decade, cut it to the bone. And so, again, we're strategically looking at areas, not where we're trying to expand government, but where we're reinvesting in programs that the legislature of the past decade had to cut, which caused harm to California residents.
So, Ben, how are the senator's comments there expected to play with the governor?
Well, let's put it this way. The governor's press office this morning tweeted out a quote from his very first, I believe it was, budget proposal in, 43 years ago, the 1975 to 76 governor's budget. They have a photograph of an awfully young Jerry Brown holding up a huge stack of paper. And the message is, the quote is, "What I propose to you is a no-nonsense budget. Within these principles of balance, need, and scrutiny, I have tried to write a budget that responds to California's future." And the governor's press office tweeted, "A lot has changed since Jerry Brown's first budget proposal 43 years ago when the general fund was $9 billion. Right now it's upwards of $125, $130 billion or so. But the guiding principles in today's May revision haven't."
All right. We have one more clip that might give a different perspective. Let's hear this.
"He will continue to resist taking large sums of new revenues that may very well be one-time in nature and committing them to higher ongoing levels of spending, because that is a policy that has tripped this state up and sent it into long-term deficits in the past few years. And the governor does not want to leave a similar problem for his successor to have to deal with."
Ben, that was H.D. Palmer with the Department of Finance.
The one and only.
Yeah, and I guess that is in line with what you were saying.
Yes. I think it's safe to say the governor will not be necessarily in favor of putting a large surplus into permanent ongoing spending increases. And we should talk a little bit about the numbers. So there was, in according to the governor's Department of Finance in January, a $6.1 billion budget surplus. The nonpartisan legislative analyst office thought it was a bit higher, more like $7 billion. Of that $6 billion, the governor wanted to put nearly all of it, all but, you know, a few hundred million dollars into reserves, either the rainy day fund to fill it up to the brim or the operating reserve. And if you think about the operating reserve, why might it need extra money? Well, there's these wildfires and mudslides that have been putting quite a strain on the state's E-fund, which is often used to fund emergency disaster relief and support. And so this E-fund this year so far has spent more than $700 million on the wildfires, mudslides, et cetera. That's in other years in the past, it had been more, you know, $100 or $200 million, I think. So it just goes to show what the damage has been to the state and what the cost has been to the state as well. I've heard some people speculate that the surplus could be twice as big now as it was back then.
Really?
At a minimum, we know that the Department of Finance was on record in March saying that revenues were about $3 billion above where they were projected to be back in January. So what that means is you've got the $6.1 billion reserve or surplus in January, another $3 billion or so. And then there's the question of what happened in April, where we know revenues came in strong. Now, that might be tempered a bit if some programs have spent too much money. We'll get an actual dollar figure from the governor's office in about 45 minutes. I would expect the governor's office to try to tamp down expectations and potentially use a more conservative figure assumption for what the surplus is, the Legislative Analyst Office might well believe that the surplus is significantly larger than what the Department of Finance says it is. We'll have to wait and see.
45 minutes from now, reporters will be scrambling, Ben included. I sometimes rate the importance of political happenings based on Ben's level of excitement in the newsroom. And I can tell you he has been pretty amped about the May revise. And
this is the last one for Jerry Brown.
That's true. There's the historic nature of it as well. I thank you for helping us understand why it's such a big deal. You are listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio, and we are speaking with Capital Bureau Chief Ben Adler now about the political news of the week. Hey, Ben, a lot of people got their ballots in the mail this week. They're now out. Voting month is underway. This week, we had possibly the only debate prior to the primary featuring the frontrunners for governor of California. Do you think that the forum made a big difference for any of the candidates?
It's always difficult to speculate on that because, you know, I haven't seen, you know, what the ratings were on TV or radio. So the question is, how many people are just now starting to focus on the race? Right. So we're about a month out, less than a month out. If you vote by mail and in Sacramento County and a handful of other counties implementing this new election system, everyone gets a ballot in the mail. That probably is going to start making people, you know, normal people, people who don't pay as much attention to this stuff as I do, you know, are starting to stop and think for a second. OK, we're electing a governor. It's not just, you know, a single legislator, member of Congress or whatever. We're electing someone to lead the fifth biggest economy in the world for the next 4 years to replace Jerry Brown, this icon of California politics. Who am I going to pick? And so the top two, regardless of political party, top two finishers in June move on to the November general election. TV ads are just now starting to ramp up. They're pretty easy to find on your TV screen. And I would imagine if you're like me, you're getting pieces in the mail. You're also seeing digital ads, and they're coming from campaigns, and they're also coming from outside groups that are backing certain candidates. So with all that, to the extent people tuned in and watched the debate, or I hope listen to the debate on CAP Radio, that might affect some people's minds, or it may just be how well the campaigns are able to execute their voter outreach strategies in this most expensive of states to campaign in.
And it'll be very interesting to see how this new system in Sacramento and four other California counties plays out over the next month and whether it increases voter turnout.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's going to be really fascinating turnout because we've seen some signs that Democratic voter turnout is higher so far in other states this year and that Republican turnout has been lower in other states this year. That said, the comparison for June should not necessarily be to, say, the Alabama U.S. Senate seat or the Virginia governor's race, both last year that Democrats saw increased turnout and were able to win some key races. Instead, you need to compare it to primaries because let's remember, in June, we're not electing the governor. We're picking the two finalists in the governor's race. Nobody is going to be elected in June who is going to go directly to Washington, D.C. To challenge or support President Trump. We're picking the finalists for those races. And many of those competitive congressional seats in California, all of them won't be decided in June. They'll be decided in November. Now, the choices in June will really shape the November election. And I would argue that the June election is very important. For example, if you know, there's a Democrat and a Republican in the governor's race, chances are the Democrat, given how blue this state is, will have a relatively easy campaign all the way to November if a Democrat and Republican finish first and second in the governor's race. If two Democrats finish first and second, then there would be most likely a more competitive governor's race. So, you know, on the other hand, Republicans really feel that they need someone at the top of the ticket, even if they lose the governor's race, to convince voters to come out and vote for the congressional candidates in the fall, to have someone at the top of the ticket driving turnout. So in many different ways, the June election is critical to both parties and to many candidates. But the turnout is never as high in a primary as it is in a general election. So we are just going to have to wait and see. And I would be loath to predict what turnout's going to be like.
All right. Well, this is a very political town, and we are lucky to have an asset like Capital Bureau Chief Ben Adler here at Capital Public Radio. Thanks for helping to sort this week's news. There was a lot of it.
Anytime. Have a good show.
All right. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Capital Public Radio.